Hello and welcome back to this very special episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm not joined with one but two people where we talk about their collaboration that they're doing and much, much more. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Tony Mantor and Katie Griswold. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. I'll start off with my obligatory thing I always ask everybody. So tell me about yourselves. I'll start with you, Katie.
So I am currently the new Miss Amini County Teen 2024, and I get to compete at Miss Georgia this June. And I love dogs. I'm autistic as well. And my community service initiative is See the Able Autism Acceptance.
All right. Now, Tony, what about, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a producer here in Nashville, Tennessee, and I work with people like Glenn Campbell's daughter, Debbie. I've worked with Jackie Wilson's son, Bobby, currently working with Donnie Most of Happy Days. And just I do a podcast, Why Not Me the World, which Katie's been on, and just trying to bring more awareness to autism around the world and just see where it can go.
All right. And we talked about this in the very beginning. Tony, how did you get involved in the whole autism scene?
Well, it's quite an interesting story, actually. I did a video for supporting our first responders. Once that was over, then I had a lady out of St. Louis that is a speech therapist for autistic children and worked with a charity and asked me if I could do that for them. So I did a video called Why Not Me Nashville, which features autistic and special needs people from Nashville. And then from there, I just started working with different people in podcasts and ultimately started my own. And it's just gone well since then.
All right. Now, Katie, when were you diagnosed with autism?
I was diagnosed with autism at the age of 8.
All right. And when you were diagnosed, did that kind of open up a lot of things to you, kind of explain why you had certain mannerisms and everything?
It definitely explained a lot why I acted out in school when I was little, because sometimes I would not be paying attention, or I would be rocking back and forth or like slamming my desk. And before I got diagnosed, it was just ADHD for me, and they gave me ADHD medicine, but that just made me more angry and more aggressive. So my mom took me to a psychiatrist, and he said, you don't need to be taking those medications. And my mom was like, well, why? And he said, well, one, she's autistic. Two, those medicines don't help.
You know, I mean, I wish people would know that there is no real medicine for autism. There is for ADHD. And it's the reason why ADHD gets mixed with ASD is they have mixed traits. They have the common traits. And that's why we always wind up getting diagnosed with ADHD first, and then our autism comes out later.
Yeah.
So Katie, what is school life like for you?
Right now, I'm just transitioning to like traditional homeschool. I was in an online public school, but then it just got too hard on me because they kept putting stuff on me that I didn't fully understand, and I was way behind. So my mom pulled me out of my old school, and she put me with a online homeschool traditional.
Would you find homeschooling easier than actual traditional school?
Yeah, I find it way easier because sometimes the teachers, they don't understand about autism, and so they tend to take things a different kind of level. And to me, I just want to like get my platform out there, maybe go to like the legislative and say, hey, this is an issue that needs to be addressed. There should be like college classes for people who want to be a teacher to know about autism and to know what they can deal with if their child, like a student, has autism.
Now, Tony, Katie, how did this collaboration between the two of you come to be?
Well, it was pretty interesting, actually. I think I put a post out on Facebook or something like that, and I don't know what it was about. I can't remember. It was something to do with my Why Not Me podcast, and I got two people that reached out to me that day. One lady that has an autistic son in South Africa, and then Katie's mom. So I put them both on my podcast, and we just kept working towards getting it out there. Then I found out that Katie can actually sing, and that's what she does for her pageantry. Mm-hmm. So she wants to make a difference. So I made a phone call to a couple of people I know here in Nashville, and I told them to find me a good uplifting song for a 16-year-old autistic girl that can make a difference. And what really happened out of it was pretty cool, because I got several songs come in, but one of them was actually called Make a Difference. And when I saw that, I just said, oh, please be as good as the title is, because this would be perfect for her. And ultimately, it was a really good song. It's got very good positive lyrics to it. She liked it. So we started working on it, and we're going to release it here probably in about another month. I'm going to have her on my podcast next Wednesday. So we're going to tell her backstory and tell everybody about it. And at the end of the podcast, after her part of it's done, I'm going to tell everybody that, hey, be on the lookout. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have her song released on iTunes. And hopefully, like the title is, it's going to make a difference.
And Katie, what drew you to music?
I just love how like people write songs and they have like a special meaning to them. And I like to hear the story behind it. So that's part of my passion for music, is to know what the story is behind it. So when I went up to Nashville and recorded the song, I wanted people to know what the song is truly about. It's about a person or people with autism and wanting to have someone to make a difference for them, or have that person make a difference for their whole community.
Now, would you say your music is your hyper-focus, Katie?
Yes, my music is definitely my hyper-focus. It's what I listen to nonstop. Sometimes I will like sing the song I recorded in my head a bit just to remember it for when I sing it live in Sandersonville this coming April. So I'm just like pushing it out there.
Now, Katie, do you have any musicians that have inspired you to want to sing, or any musicians you listen to that you just like listening to?
Well, I grew up listening to Tim McGraw and Luke Bryan. Fun fact, Luke Bryan went to college with one of my cousins at Georgia Southern, so I listen to Luke Bryan more than I do to Tim McGraw, but with my dad, we have a special bond, and that one song, Tim McGraw, My Little Girl, was when I was born. He would play that song for when I was having a fussy moment when I was a baby, and that was just our song. So just hearing more music from all these other country artists or Christian artists is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like them one day. I want to be on the stage and just spread a message.
All right, and Tony, you obviously were a musician first. Who was your inspirations?
Well, I listened to, because Elvis and Creedence, and all the 70s, Eagles, Bad Company. I was more on the pop, on the rock side. And it's kind of interesting. Everybody thinks it's kind of crazy that here I am in the pop world and singing those type of songs, and then I wind up in Nashville, but it's like I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, which is jazz and that kind of style. And I told everybody, it's like when I moved to Nashville, it's like, okay, I didn't go to Berklee just to do country. I went to Nashville to be involved in music. So I've been very fortunate that I've been able to work with many different styles of music, ranging from country to jazz to adult contemporary pop, R&B, the whole gamut, which is what I love about music, is it can touch everybody in different ways. And it's the stylistics lots of times is what gravitates people towards what they like.
All right. And Katie, what inspires you most? What musicians really inspire you to want to become a musician?
Elvis Presley, because growing up, I didn't know who Elvis was. I thought, like, the first time I heard Jailhouse Rock, I thought it was an African American singing it. And that's what I thought. And at first, I didn't like Elvis, but my dad shows me videos of Elvis. I was like, wait a minute. He can sing. He's white. Me being autistic, I was confused. But the more I listened to Elvis Presley's songs, the more I what the message was behind him. Like, If I Can Dream, that was during the Martin Luther King movement and the John F. Kennedy movement. That's what I like about Elvis Presley, because he makes songs and he puts a message out there to the world.
All right. And Tony, what drew you to producing?
Well, I had been on the road, and I'd been singing and performing and doing everything that I'd hoped to do. I had some records out there that did well, hit the charts. But like any singer that you listen to that becomes a celebrity, a star, so you've got like different levels. You got celebrities, you've got stars, and then you've got your superstars. So very rarely you're going to get anyone that's just going to become a superstar, you know, like the Rebas, the Elvis, you know, the Shares, those types. They're few and far between. But you have a lot of well-known celebrities, well-known stars that have success in recording records, having radio like them, people like them, buying them, and making, you know, the living of touring. So that was my hopes, like anyone else. So I had several hit records that reached radio, reached the charts, but I never had that one big one that transformed me from just someone you hear on radio to that next step, which is traveling the country, doing concerts and that type of thing. So I was working with people that actually had done that. My mentors were people that had traveled and had big hit records and done that. And then one day, one of them said to me, he says, you know, we're getting ready to retire here. You understand music. You know a good song. You know how to evaluate people and singers. Why don't you come out and do what we're doing and get into production development? So I had to really think about it because in doing that, number one, I had to move to Nashville. Number two, I had to come off the road and get behind the scenes and start working the songs the way that the people working the songs when I was recording them. So lo and behold, you know, I made the decision to make that move and get down here, and probably ultimately it was the best move I made.
Now, Tony, I'm going to ask you a really big question. From talking to all these people on your podcast that are autistic, what have you learned from everybody?
Oh, it's been a tremendous journey, because when I did my very first podcast, which was last June 28th, I think, I knew absolutely nothing about autism. I knew a few things that people had told me that helped me put the autism podcast together. But as far as really knowing what and how it affected people, I didn't know. So now I've talked with so many different people that have told me their stories on how they've either found out that they are autistic, or how they found out their child is autistic, or some that's had multiple children that are autistic and how they get along, how it affects them. The one common phrase that I hear in just about every single podcast that I do, and it really sets the tone, is that you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. Because mm-hmm. I start my podcast out very similar on just about every podcast, because I want to start that building process of them telling their story. So usually one of my first questions is, how did you find out you were autistic, or when did you find out that your autistic child was autistic, and what led you to trying to find a diagnosis? And then from there, the stories all are different, because mm-hmm. everybody has a different story for the same question on how they found out, how they found out their kids were, how they found out they were. I've talked with people that have been diagnosed later in life, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and everyone had such a unique story, and there is none that are the same, but yet they all have the same message, is that, hey, just because we're autistic doesn't mean we can't get out and do things that everybody else does and really create a life that's good. So I think that message needs to be out there more, and the more that we have podcasts like yours and other podcasts around, that hopefully we'll get that message out there and help people that need to be helped, because it's like, you know, it's an autism spectrum. You've got different levels. You've got some people that are on the higher end of those levels that can get out there that are PhDs and doctors and mm-hmm. researchers. And then, unfortunately, I just talked with one that's coming up here in a few weeks, that her son, when he was first diagnosed, he was like just a few years old and not very big. Now he's 6'3", 380 pounds, and he wow. is a complete, can be a complete disaster at times, because when he has his meltdowns, unfortunately, sometimes he'll hurt his mother, not intentionally, but it happens. Right. So we need to let people know that it is a spectrum, and just because you think of one thing, which is Rain Man, it's not that. You know, people have to understand that there's yeah. such a wide spectrum, and that people can get out there and they can do everything that anybody else can do, but then you've got some that need some help as well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things I've been doing is I wrote a book. And I'm writing a book, actually, and it's basically my life. It's something no autistic person has done, is share their life experiences from the beginning of being diagnosed all the way up. Okay. But my book has one big message in it, and that's, you got to step out of your comfort zone.
Right.
Otherwise, this world's going to pass you by, your parents will be gone, and you're going to look back, and you're just going to say, I should have, could have, would have.
Right. I think we brought that up in Katie's episode too, her comfort zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Katie, I'm proud of you for stepping out of your comfort zone. I mean, that's something all of us autistics need to do. And that's my question to you, is what was it like stepping out of that comfort zone for you?
It was very confusing. Like, I was a little scared of stepping out of my comfort zone, and I didn't know what to do at first. I was terrified of what might happen, but the more I just like relax into the new environment, to my new comfort zone, I'm happy where I'm at. I'm happy to be at Miss Georgia with all of my friends that finally accept me for who I am as a person, mm-hmm. and to know that some of their own family members have autism or maybe on the spectrum of autism. And to know that really melts my heart.
And Katie, how hard was it for you to make friends, though?
It was very hard, because sometimes the people who you thought they were your friends mm-hmm. will just stab you in the back and just say, we just use you for your advantage. That's what I felt mm-hmm. like at dance. For people who I thought were my friends, they just stabbed me in the back because they used me because I knew a dance before them, or I knew the dance longer because I practiced and they didn't, and they kept complaining why I knew it so fast. It's just how my brain works. It's how when I listen to music, I know the moves. I understand that they just don't understand. And that's why I left the dance community, but not fully, because I want to open a dance studio for kids with special needs.
You know, you brought up a good point. And what people don't realize, and I'm pretty sure, Tony, you've come across this, is those of us who are autistic, when I went away to school for college originally, to University of Wisconsin in Oshkosh, they had a special program for those who were disabled. And we were told it'll take a regular person an hour to learn something. It will take us 2 hours because one, we need to process, and two, we need to understand. And that's what Katie's brain was doing, is it's processing and then understanding of it. And then all of a sudden we get it. And then when we get it, we keep doing it, and we become better at it.
Yeah.
Right. It's focus. You know, that's what,
yeah,
that's one thing. That's the one common thread that I've found in most of the people that I talk with, is what they're either them or their kids, that once they've been diagnosed as autistic, that their focus changes and they become very, mm-hmm. very immersed in what they're doing. It's kind of like I've got this lady that I was telling you about that I've got coming up talking about her son. She's talking about her son, and he loves country music. And he was born in like 1997, and he now, because of all the information he's done, knows all the facts for stuff that dates back to 1992, and he wasn't even born yet.
That's amazing. I mean, that's the one thing you're going to find, Tony, as you talk with more and more people, including Katie and me, that's what our hyper-focus is. We
right.
have one thing we're really good at, and we just hone it. And we become good at it, and we can just spill all this information out to you. And it gets to the point where people look at us and like, enough is enough. You're over explaining and sharing this information.
Right.
And Katie, what has your life been like since you've been since you got diagnosed?
It was kind of hectic, and as I said, I was bullied in school and bullied at dance, and it was just too much to handle because my brother is also autistic, and he's in the other room right now, but he's like lower functional than me, to where like sometimes he's afraid of school because he got bullied a lot of school, to where he got abused at school and he was afraid of school, period. So we're still like slowly getting him back to going to school. And that's just what we have to do in life. We have to move on. We have to just calm down and just take one step at a time. And that's what we're doing with me and my brother.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we need to look at is when we get bullied, we need to look at them and say, they're insecure. They're putting their insecurities on us.
Yeah.
And once we start to realize that, and they start picking on us, and we just start ignoring them, they're going to leave us alone.
Yeah. That's what I did to some of my fake friends at dance, because they sometimes pick on me when I'm like on the phone, also, and like death threats or like any kind of threats to me on the phone. So I just like blocked them on every social media platform, including my
good for you
phone number. I was like, you know what? I got people at Miss Georgia who support me, and I got my true best friends at dance, which is Braylee Abler, who's also autistic, along with her siblings, and Savannah, who's like a little sister to me. She understands what I've been through, and she's the one who's been sticking up. And that's what I really appreciate about friends who care.
That's true. I mean, that's one of the things I've talked about, is you knowing who your friends are. And there are those who will stick with you, and then that minute you turn your back, they'll leave you. And then there are those who will be there through and through. And
Yeah.
those are the ones that you need to keep.
Yeah, and
But
sometimes people will go up to me saying, "Well, just because they like, how did they bully you? Like, they didn't like punch you or anything." It's not about physical harm. It's about like not interacting with that individual who has autism, like not inviting them to anything, even though they're part of the team. You don't invite them to anything. And to me, it's wrong because they think that they're feeling left out. And to me, that is also part of bullying. And I just want
It is.
people to understand that you should not let that individual feel left out. Invite them to your house, have a sleepover. Like, please understand that just because that person has autism, they can do anything that they put their minds to it. If they want to become Miss America, let them be Miss America. If they want to be in the military, that shouldn't be a disability. People with autism are very intelligent. They should be in the military. And I bet you there are some people who are in the military who do have autism but are afraid to tell.
I'm actually going to be interviewing a person that knows he's autistic, knows several things about different things that he's been through, but he refused to get his diagnosis. And we're going to discuss the reasons why he wouldn't. And some of those things have just been brought up.
I mean, I've talked with people in the past, not on my show, that say, and I've seen in chat groups that people say they don't want to use the term autistic for their son, or they don't, because they don't want to label their son disabled. They're not disabled.
Right.
But in reality, you are, or your son is, because it is technically a mental disability.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation with a gentleman that works at a radio station over in England, and he has a lot of people that he works with that are autistic or have special needs or whatever. There was two autistic people that got upset with each other, and they were arguing back and forth, and he had to step in, and he goes, and he one of them said, "Well, he should understand what I'm going through. He's autistic too." And he came back and goes, "Just because he's autistic doesn't mean that he's going to be exactly like you, just like, because my brother's not just like me." And then he made a very interesting point, and he said, he goes, "I'm willing to bet that if everybody in the world got diagnosed, we're all autistic to a certain degree. It's just it's such a spectrum." And that was pretty interesting, because what is, quote, normal, to some people, is not normal to others. And just because someone diagnosed someone, in the way that he put it together, it made a lot of sense.
I mean, you make a lot of sense, and you can take all the online tests you can. I mean, I've taken like three or four, and none of them say I'm autistic. They say I'm close to it. I have all the traits, and I know that I have problems. My parents have even told me I only see black and white. I don't see that center. And I'm pretty sure, Katie, you feel that way too. You only see right or wrong. And some have you ever had an instance where your mom or your dad's telling a story, and somewhere along the lines, they made a mistake in the story, and you immediately want to correct them?
Yeah, it happened when my dad worked in Swainsboro. He was telling me about the Martin Luther King, because at school we had like an assignment on it, like a little quick check slash quiz. And he messed up on one part, and I'm like, "Stop right there. Let me explain what happened. I watched this movie about Martin Luther King. I'm about to explain the whole story." And all of a sudden, all his partners who was in the room just like stopped and listened to me. And my dad was just shocked.
Yeah, I mean, I've had it where my father or my mother would be telling a story during the holidays, and I'd correct them in the middle of that story, and then later they'd pull me aside and go, "You kind of embarrass me by correcting me. You need to wait till the end and then tell me off to the side so you don't embarrass me."
Yeah, I hear that a lot in a lot of my podcasts is that they'll get focused and they'll take and understand things to a different level than others do, and it's just very interesting the interaction between everybody and how they navigate through life knowing the different mm-hmm. things that they know and how they put it all together.
What people don't realize, and Katie, you brought this up, is that we are capable. We are different than everyone else. We just think differently than everyone else. Our minds process information differently than everyone else. And people need to realize this. We're not diseased. We are not, there's nothing wrong with us. It's just the way our minds think and the way our minds work.
Yeah.
And I actually talked with the Assistant Prime Minister of Autism in Australia. And she was saying that they are working with people out there in the fact that now in their two colleges in South Australia, their mandatory system now is before, if you're going to teach education, you have to take a course in autism to understand it. So when you're going to teach, you're going to get somebody who's autistic, you will understand them.
Yeah, that's what definitely needs to happen here in America.
And there's another thing that's happening, and it's the travel industry. And of all, mm-hmm. and I was talking with a travel person that's in the travel industry here about a couple, 3 weeks ago, and we're trying to line up an interview with him about all of it. But the interesting part is they're trying to, here in the U.S., take and get the airports so they're autistic friendly, but mm. they're trying to mold them after Dubai because they already have done it.
Mm.
So that was pretty interesting, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the term I think that people are coming out with is sensory friendly.
Yeah, that's right.
Less lights, less sound. I know my first time going away to college, I was going for my master's degree. We're at the airport, and the guy at the desk goes to us. You're only allowed one parent at the gate. And all of a sudden, I don't know why, I just broke into tears. I started crying because I wanted both my parents. And it later occurred to me that was a meltdown. I had all these sounds and all these noises and smells coming at me all at once, and then all this information that my mind couldn't process it.
Right.
And I think, and Katie, I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me and Joel, Tony, airports alone need to work on how to deal with those of us who are autistic and compensate us.
Well, I haven't been to an airport, so I haven't been in your situation, but I have been in Panama City Beach at church camp, and sometimes some of the churches don't understand about autism, and they took, at first, I wanted to bring my phone so I can communicate with my dad and my mom. And when the youth pastor said we are not allowed to have phones, I guess I had a meltdown. I can't really mm-hmm. recall because it was in the sixth grade, and I don't remember anything from the sixth grade. But it is what it is. Like, I got to that point where I'm okay without mom and dad, to where I have a chaperone if I need to talk to them, to my parents, I can just, hey, can I call my parents on your phone? And that's where it went on.
Well, you brought up another issue, I think, that this is where people have to understand more, is the term meltdown. Because mm-hmm. the average person out there does not know the difference between someone just having a tantrum and someone having a meltdown. And that's something that I think really needs to be addressed so that the average person out there that doesn't know anything about autism, if they at least can learn that there is a difference between the two, then it might help out in the future.
Yeah, I mean, what people don't realize is when they see somebody having a meltdown or a tantrum, they can't tell the difference. And that's why I feel police, Emergency people, police, firemen need to know the difference, and they need to identify it so they don't see. They can go, oh, he's autistic. He's having a meltdown. We need to address this differently than we're addressing someone who's got a tantrum.
Right.
Yeah, because you brought up a good point, and I think I mentioned this in the podcast I did with Tony, is that I was watching a video about a teacher and one student who had autism having a meltdown. The teacher thought it was a tantrum because he was crying a lot. And so she called the police, and the little boy got scared. And so he ran away, and the police was chasing him and tackled him to the ground and put him in cuffs. That should not be what's happening. Now that kid is scared of law enforcement because he's afraid of going back into that tragic state again. And so that's what needs to be addressed. Police and fire people should be understanding of what autism is and what a difference between a tantrum and a meltdown.
I read a really good explanation of what it would feel like to have all your sensories overloaded. And someone said, imagine taking your kid, coming out of the shower, throwing him on his clothes, having his clothes backwards, having him itchy, throwing him onto a noisy bus, dealing with the noise, the itchiness, the wetness of him, and dealing with all those senses coming at him, and then dealing with 8 hours of school, coming home and just being burnt out from all that. That's what we deal with almost daily when we're outside, is our minds are trying to process this all, and that's what causes a meltdown, is our brains can't process everything so fast.
Right. And one thing that others have to learn too is, you brought up school, and one in my first episode, she made a very, very good comment, and it was, people have to understand that when I pick up my book, leave my desk in school, that autism doesn't stay there. It comes home with me, and it's going to be there for the rest of my life. You know, so people have to understand that there's a difference in people, number one, and when someone's autistic, that you kind of have to take and have those safe spots so that everybody can coexist, because it's not something you can just turn on and turn off. It's something that will follow you wherever you go.
And that reminds me of something I was told when I originally went away to school, and that is, you're going to live with it, you're going to die with it. You can't get rid of it.
Right.
You can only find shortcuts to help work with it.
That makes sense.
Now, Katie, do you, besides music, what other passions do you have?
I have a passion for dance, because, again, I want to teach dance to kids with special needs. And my niece Maggie, who's older, we're kind of we act like sisters. We're in that category where she's a few years younger than me, but we act like sisters, and we're kind of like twin sisters, and we are like actual sisters. But we both want to open a studio together for kids with special needs, and we just want to take people, the students, to pageants and dance for entertainment. And if they're comfortable with going to a dance competition, just one for right now, then we'll see about where that leads us. But we just want to start small and then move on from there.
Now, what about you, Tony? I mean, we obviously know you have a passion for music and producing. Do you have any other passions in life?
Well, you know, I've got a lot of different things that I do. There's just so many things. I try and appreciate everything out there that I can. But this podcast has turned into a pretty much of a passion, you know, because like I said, I didn't know anything about it when I first started, wasn't aware of what goes on in people's lives. And each episode that I take and edit, I'll take and get all the editing done, and then I'll listen to it for 30 minutes and listen to it. And then I'll be listening not so much to the content, so much as making sure that the breaths are gone and just the different little things, so that when people do listen to it, it sounds like a conversation like we're having now. The biggest thing that I can say is that the passion that has come out of this is that I've learned so much, and I've learned the struggles that some are going through, and some of the ones that they continue to go through, and then some people that don't have any struggles at all, and just the stories. And at the end, you know, it's like, it's really feels like a passion of that's helping people. And I've always wanted to help people all through my life. And back when I was a kid, I was always the male Dear Abby, which most, a lot of people now won't know who that is, but you know, so that's been always kind of my passion, is helping. And this is just kind of falling right into that kind of same tracks.
All right. Katie, do you have any sensory issues?
I do. Sometimes I will like pick at my clothes because either they're uncomfortable because I like fuzzy stuff. They're comfortable for me. It's just non-fuzzy stuff that is uncomfortable. And sorry, my dog is just having a meltdown. I'm pretty sure my dog's autistic. I'm pretty sure that's happening. But with like, it's to me, when I eat food, sometimes it's the texture of the food. Sometimes I won't eat that specific food because of one, the texture that I don't like to feel in my mouth, or two, it might be disgusting, or that's sensory to me.
All right. Tony, you obviously like country music. Is there any other music you are drawn to?
Oh, I love all styles. I'm a big, as a lot of people don't realize it, but I'm a big jazz traditionalist. I like, you go back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, the Frank Sinatras of the world, the Bobby Darins, you know, those kind of things. What Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga did was really cool. That's something that I really love. I mean, I like country, but you know, it's all music. I mean, I just, if it's good, if it's got a great message, if the melodies are uplifting, you know, that's the one great thing about music, is that music is timeless. It, you know, if you can find the right song. It, and when I say timeless, it may be a song that no one will ever know 50 years from now, like they did Elvis. But it'll be timeless to the person that's listening to it, because when you listen to music, it will bring back an emotion. It can be a good emotion. It can be a bad emotion. It can be any kind of emotion. It can remind you of school, of high school. It can remind you of the song that you heard when a friend of yours, you know, had something happen to them, whether it was good or bad. It can just do so many things in bringing back your memories. So that's the great thing I love about music, and all music can do that, no matter what style you pick.
Now, Katie, is there anything that you struggle with mostly? Anything you really have a hard time understanding, dealing with, that you need extra help with?
I have a hard time with math. Math. I hate math. I hate algebra. I hate everything about just X times whatever. I would rather do 1 + 1 or 1 + just like the plus and minuses, I'm okay. But the multiplication and division, it's just not working out for me, nor is counting money. I can't count money for the rest of my life. I know a debit card. I know how to use that. That's the only money I know how to use.
All right. Tony, I had read that you had toured with Ronnie McDowell. What was that like?
Well, I did a short tour with him. As a matter of fact, today's his birthday. I put that on Facebook. But when I first met Ronnie McDowell, it was a year before Elvis had died, and so he was in the process, just like everyone else, of trying to make his mark on music and get his songs out there, be heard, and create his identity. And then when Elvis died, he had The King Is Gone, because at that time, Ronnie was probably the best Elvis vocal impersonator in the country. You could listen to Ronnie and you could listen to him sing Elvis. And if you was just listening, you would have a hard time knowing that that wasn't Elvis. As a matter of fact, when Kurt Russell did a couple of his movies that was about Elvis, everyone thought that he was singing on stage to the Elvis tracks, and it was actually Ronnie McDowell singing those tracks.
Wow. Now, Katie, if you can choose any musician to sing with or open for, who would it be?
I would have to say Carrie Underwood, because she's a great singer. She was on American Idol years ago, and that's how she started out. And the songs I hear her sing, sometimes I get the story behind it. Other times I'm like, huh? But I like Carrie Underwood, and I would love to sing with her one day, including Dolly Parton, who is my biggest inspiration. She's like, I call her my god grandmother. So that I want to sing with Dolly because I love her music.
Now, Katie, what advice would you give to somebody who is just finding out they're autistic?
I would say take a moment to calm down, get that information settled in, and then look up what autism is. But also to say, hey, I'm autistic. I need help. Can you help me figure what I need help with? Not medication wise, but like mentally. And if they say you should probably just calm down, just be yourself, then be yourself. I encourage people every day who have autism, be yourself. Don't listen to what people say, what they think you can do to cure autism. There's no cure.
No.
There will never be a cure for autism.
That's why the majority, Tony, you'll probably hear this talking with a lot of your people. This is why the majority of those of us who are autistic hate Autism Speaks. They think there is a cure. There is nobody on their staff that's autistic. The one person that was on their staff left. So they don't understand autism.
I've heard that. You know, actually, I've met some people that have worked with Autism Speaks. I've met people on their board of directors, and I have no problem with any of them. But I know several people that are autistic that do. So I've heard it, and the way I look at it, this is generalizing now, but if a charity, no matter which one it is, can help an autistic person in some small way, even though you might not agree with everything they do, that's still better than doing nothing.
True. Now, Tony, I got a question for you, and I'll ask the same to you, Katie. Have you come across people who, you're going to come across people who either oppose of the term Asperger's, or those who are with the term Asperger's? Have you come across that yet in your talks with your guests?
Yeah, I had a recent person that I just interviewed, and I don't think I've released the episode yet. And she was diagnosed autistic, and she would let everybody know that she was autistic, and her family got discouraged with her because she was using the word autism, because in their mind, autism was like something bad. But she said, you know, Asperger's hasn't been used in 10 years, and the correct definition now is autistic, and that's what I am, and that's where I'm going to be moving forward with as an autistic person. So that was her response to it. And she's one of the few that's brought it up, but others have brought it up, but they just kind of skimmed over it. But she actually dug into it a little bit and let people know.
Yeah, well, a lot of people say they will stay away from it. And Katie, I'm pretty sure you're aware of this. It's because of the background of the name. People thought Hans Asperger was a Nazi supporter. And it turns out I had a friend who's really big in the autism scene in England do a whole research thing on video on it. And it turns out he's not. So it's the younger generation who sit there and haven't done the research and just only know what they've heard that refuse to use the term.
Yeah, that's also an issue in school and dance for me, because they thought that the Asperger's person was supporting the Nazis. And I just told them, I said, look it up. Just look it up. I'm tired of hearing it. Look it up.
Yeah. Have you had to deal with that, Katie?
I did, because my dance friend Braylee, one of her brothers, has Asperger's and autism, but we call it autism for him, but his grandma calls it Asperger's, but she understands that it's also autism as well. And sometimes he doesn't understand much. He's already graduated high school, because I went to prom with him last year for a senior prom and made him stay like 2 hours instead of for 20 minutes, because last time he got an escort by a teacher. No one wanted to go to prom with him. And that I think that's why because they didn't understand it. They didn't understand him. So I went with him as an autistic individual myself. And we had a blast. My cousin Hudson was there. And he's a senior. Hudson's a senior this year. He's on the baseball team at ECI and Manning County Institute. And he understands me more because we both have that connection. He's not autistic, but I am. He loves me like I'm his younger sibling.
That's good.
You know, I'll tell you one thing here that's very interesting. When I told you that when I first started this, I didn't know anyone that was autistic and didn't know anything about it. So now here I am almost a year later, and I've had a few friends of mine that I didn't know was autistic that come out to me and told me they are. You know, so I actually knew some that I didn't even know. So that just kind of shows people how misinformed that they are about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably because either they were masking, which is, I'm pretty sure you've heard that term in your interviews.
All the time.
They were pretending they're normal just so they can fit into society. And that's one of the things I'm really against is masking, is why should we hide who we are just so we fit into society?
Right, exactly. You know, and one person told me, and she was over in England, and she told me that this is something that I've heard in a few of my episodes, and she actually felt like she was getting close to a good friend, and she felt like she needed to let her know that she's autistic and let her know that she's no different than her, but she is autistic. And she said as soon as she told her that, the response that she got immediately caused her to realize that she should have never told her. And I'm willing to bet that you're willing to know what that person told her. And the phrase was, well, you don't look autistic.
Oh,
you know, so
I heard go on.
That right there. Made her. I wish I'd never told her, she said.
I know. I had saw somewhere on Facebook a long time ago, a girl in school went to her, advisor and said, oh, I'm autistic. And the autistic person and the advisor goes, that's funny, you don't look it. And she retorted back with, that's funny, you don't look ignorant.
That's good. But you know, one of the one of the more interesting conversations that I had, and I've had so many good conversations, but this one was, there was two things that he brought out, and he's married, has two kids, and he does some public speaking. So the first thing that was, that really, when he first got the first question, just really completely threw him completely off balance, because he didn't know how to respond to it because it was so ignorant. And he said that he's had so many people come up to him and, number one, say that, oh, I didn't realize that autistic people could have children. And that was the first thing. Oh. And he said, you wouldn't believe how many people have said that to me after I've told them my story. And then the second thing that he said, which is just by far, I brought this up several times in different episodes, by far is just so, so awesome in how he relates to people and how he and his wife. So he's autistic, his wife is neurotypical, and everybody just kind of wonders, how do they mesh? How do they get along? And he basically said that they sat down and they came up with this idea that they turned it into a culture difference. So imagine if someone is in the U.S., marries someone that's from Japan, that they have such a different culture. You have to learn each other's culture. You have to accept each other's culture. And then that just creates a bigger bond. And I've told that story several different times. And just people just love the term that he used in the culture difference.
Yeah. Now, Tony, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Katie is, what advice would you give to somebody that you found out was autistic and just finding out about it?
Well, the first thing I would say, now that I know a little bit more, is, number one, don't look at yourself in the mirror and think that you're anything less than anyone else. Number two is seek advice from the loved ones that's helping you. And you've got to remember that your parents love you just like they would love anybody else, you know, your brother, your sister that's not autistic, you know, and believe that over a certain period of time that you can still do anything that you want to do. You just might take you a little bit longer to process it than other people do, but everybody mm-hmm. else is different in this world, whether they're autistic or not autistic, and not everybody processes everything the same anyways. So it really doesn't matter, as long as you take and believe in yourself, believe in the mm-hmm. friends that you have, and believe in the family supporting you. And then if you've got all that, then you just move forward and whatever life gives you, you know, you work forwards and hopefully it works out the way that you want it to.
All right. And Katie, is there any last advice you would like to give the people listening out there who are finding out about that they're autistic?
All what Mr. Tony said, I have to agree with what Mr. Tony said, because he took the words right out of my mouth, because I was literally just going to say that right after. But mostly, just don't feel like that you need to fit in with a crowd that doesn't accept you. You were born to stand mm-hmm. out. That's why I like to use the phrase, don't fit in, stand out.
I mean, that's exactly what I've said is, we are different. Why do we need to blend into anything? I like to use a story about Ford and how everyone had the same car until people realized we want difference. We want different colors, different types of cars. And then people started driving different colored cars, different types of cars, different models, so people could stand out.
Yeah. God didn't create us to be all the same. He didn't make all the boys look like Adam. He didn't make all the girls look like Eve. He made us different. And different is a good thing.
And Tony, any last words of advice?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, when someone's diagnosed autistic, you know, there's so many different levels. And this, you know, that's why they call it a spectrum. But the one thing that I think that people have got to realize is that they're individuals, and just like any individual that's out there, have different things they like, different things they don't like, different things they want to do. And collectively, if they can figure it out and put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And I know the autism spectrum has a puzzle, you know, but life is a puzzle. You know, I mean, all of us, we all have to take and see what works and what doesn't work. And lots of times we'll try and put that odd piece of that puzzle and make it fit, and it doesn't fit. And so when it doesn't fit, find out what does. And then when you find that out, then you start understanding yourself. You find that comfort zone that you can take and live in, to where you know that you can be around people that think differently but still support you, and really create a life for yourself that has some value and creates value for others as well.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Tony Mantor and Katie Griswold. And I'll see you in the next one. See you there, everybody.
Nothing.